Hello and welcome to the October Awaken the Nest. We are going to be talking today. The theme is on consistency. And you know, I always like to spin these things a little bit. So we're going to be talking about responsibility, which is essentially the essence of consistency. We're going to start today. Actually, we're going to start with journaling. So what we're going to do is just open your journals and we're just going to do a 2-minute journaling process on what comes up for you when you think of responsibility. So grab your journals and just write free write on anything about responsibility. I'll set my timer here. Good, bad, and ugly. Okay, about 30 seconds. And finish up your last thought. So responsibility. Everybody has something on this word. Everybody has some feelings around this. Some people might find it confining or confusing or scary. They might be overwhelmed by it, maybe angry by responsibility. You might be motivated by responsibility. You might really want to show up. And there might be certain things in your life that you want to show up for, and other things in your life that you're like, I am running for the hills. All of this is possible within you. And just notice how this idea of responsibility, it smacks of, one of the things it smacks of is in the negative side, it's accountability. In fact, actually, it can be actually a good thing in terms of this idea of accountability. Some people do enjoy that. It takes a lot to get there. But I'll share just a really short story about this work I used to do. I used to work in education policy a long, long, long lifetime ago. And I led communications at the time. And I walked into this world, it was education reform policy. So I walked into this world of people talking about teachers need to have accountability. They need to have responsibility. And it was like the most vicious conversation, the most vicious back and forth between teachers and policymakers, people saying, you know, you need to be held accountable. And what happened was that the minute that the policymakers began to talk about this idea of responsibility or accountability, the teachers fought back really hard. Their teeth were bared. And this, you know, even like there was a, like, by the time I got into the mix of things, we started to soften the language a little bit after having done multiple focus groups that found out that teachers actually don't like being told that they don't feel accountable or that we don't think that they're accountable. And So the language softened a little bit to this word of responsibility instead of accountability. It means the same things. Now, what I want to point out in this story is I know actually it's a couple of my clients are former teachers. It's interesting, this world I can't seem to get out of. Three, yeah. So it's funny because policymakers, and those of you who have had any work in education or those of you who've ever been involved, whether through your own kids, one of the things that happens is that you have these policymakers who are asking teachers to be completely responsible for changing the lives of the students, yet giving them no actual power. And so when we have this desire, like there's an external push for responsibility, yet no power, then yeah, you're gonna fight back at that idea. It reminds me of the idea, you know, like you go to a grocery store and you know, the cashier overcharges you for something. And so you have to get that manager to come down and they have to do their little key and, you know, get the price to go back to what it is. And it's like, you give this person a set of keys. They have the responsibility for making sure that the customer gets the right price, but you give them no actual power. You know, a manager is a very, very poorly paid position, not that different from teachers. So you give them everything except for the ability to act with innovation, the ability to think creatively. In that sense, responsibility feels like a trap. It feels like a trap. It feels like a job nobody wants. Nobody really wants to grow up and become a manager of a grocery store, at least not after you've, you know, seen how that actually operates. I think as a kid, that might've been a fantasy of mine. Anyway, so I want to talk about this idea of responsibility because we're also having this conversation in the context of the pandemic. So we're having this impossible conversation about responsibility because we're talking about everything all at once. We're talking about individual and collective responsibility. And those two were being asked to hold the same weight for our individual responsibility as we're holding for our collective responsibility at the same time, which is impossible. That's why I call this conversation impossible. That's why everybody is freaking out about this idea of, okay, is it the right choice to wear a mask? Is it the right choice to get the vaccination? Because everything is compounding into this concept. And these two, the individual, my responsibility to myself, my family, it holds weight in one area. And the collective, my responsibility to the collective holds a different kind of weight. They can't both hold the same weight at the same time. So it's essentially irresponsible for us to be asking both of these to, for every individual to be carrying both of these equally, because true responsibility is a power. And it's the power of being willing and able to constantly shift where we prioritize. So this means it can look messy, which is why, you know, the teachers, you know, when we're asking them to take accountability, you know, we're asking them to do something that is very messy, but we're asking them to be very, very clean about it. So, you know, this is, it's funny because I was involved in so many in that job, so many focus groups, so many market research, polling and things like that, just to figure out like, why do teachers hate this idea of accountability? And most of the time, what we found is that teachers do feel a tremendous responsibility for their students. But the other issue is that they also have other responsibilities. You know, we ask them to show up on evenings and weekends without extra pay. We ask them to be like everything to every family with no extra training. You know, like they come in with like, you know, maybe a master's degree in math. And then we're asking them to be basically like a family psychotherapist. It doesn't work. They can't hold both of those responsibilities. So my point in this is that we cannot eclipse our responsibilities, our individual responsibilities for the collective responsibility, and vice versa. So that, I'll just say that again, because it's important. And this is something that most of us are wrestling with in this pandemic time. We cannot eclipse the individual responsibility for the collective responsibility. We cannot eclipse the collective responsibility for the individual. We have to make it work somehow together. How we do this, we're gonna play with a tool today that is a tool that I haven't taught in years. And it's a tool that is foundational for the intuitive training that I received in, like, when I was doing this work and when I first walked in to my first teacher in like 2001. And it has to do with releasing the charge on something. When we release the charge, we can begin to work with this thing called the ego. The ego, you know, it's talked about in spiritual teachings as like the ego is this really bad thing. Nobody wants an ego. We all have one. It's what makes it, like, my name in the corner of this Zoom screen is because I have an ego. If I didn't have an ego, then I would be this like formless, like I would see myself as all of you, which I, you know, at the core, I am. But the differentiation is necessary for the collective growth. So the ego is, in terms of responsibility, it's going to be our friend and our foe in this question of where do I pick up responsibility? Our friend, the ego, reminds us that we must stand up for ourselves. So in the example of the teachers, but you know, you're asking me to work all the time on the weekends, but I don't have enough money to pay my bills. You know, I already have a side hustle. The foe, ego, tells us that it's us against them. This is the MO that I witnessed for when the teachers' unions and the policymakers went against each other. It was always this game of us against them. On both sides, nobody was right. Everybody was operating from the sense of it's us against them, and we have to, you know, bash down the other side. Now, you can just notice in this conversation about the pandemic how there is the same kind of dialogue, that there is this general sense of it's us against them. And it's a sense of like, we have to bash the other side down in order for us to win. But that's not really winning at all. And I'm talking about both sides. Like I have been very much in the gray space. I know I work with a lot of people who are all over the place with this thing. And, you know, I don't have allegiance. I honestly don't have allegiance. I have my personal beliefs and things that I follow, but I truly respect where everyone's guidance is bringing them in this, because this is very unprecedented. And, you know, we have to trust what our bodies are telling us. So, but I want to point out that it's these issues, they stem from this idea of binary. And that's basically a question that appears to only have two options. Responsibility has two options, appears to at least. It's like, I either do or I shirk. So I either take it on or I shirk. So, and it relates to, you know, people generally have one of these two relationships with responsibility, if it's not an examined relationship, if it's not something that they've explored really deeply. So it's either you have a person who will step up and raise their hand no matter what. This is a person who will be really, really drawn to excessive challenge. And they may say, I really like challenges. I really like being told constructive criticism. I really like it when there is someone who's holding my feet to the fire. And that is one side of this binary, okay? And that's like the person who decides that they're going to go get that job at Walmart and become the manager. they're like, it's a shit job. Let's all just recognize that that's like a really horrible job. And they're saying, okay, this is me. I'm going to take this horrible job because it's what I have to do. I can handle this. I can't just live amongst the cashiers. Now you have the other side of this binary, which is someone who goes and hides in the corner whenever there's somebody who says it's, you know, we need to have someone step up for this. So this idea of the binary, it really limits us. It really limits our ability to really unpack the power of responsibility, because there's always more than two answers all the time. There's, I think Clarissa Pinkola Estes has a really great, and I'll see if I can remember it totally, but she has a really great breakdown of this. And for women who run with the wolves, if anyone has not read that, I highly recommend it. But she always talks about this idea of there are four possible outcomes to any question, which is yes, no, maybe, or the unseen, the thing that hasn't appeared yet. And so this is the true thing with this idea. Anytime you're faced with a thing where there's two questions, there's two outcomes rather, there's a binary, you can always go back to that. Well, actually, there's more answers to this. And it has to do with being creative. It has to do with looking at your charge on the issue. The binary comes when we are very charged. Notice this. We are very charged about the pandemic. We are very charged about the idea of masks. We are very charged about the idea of a vaccine. And so what happens is that until we release the charge, we can't discover that there are other creative ways to address this. So, because the reality is that responsibility, you have to do this at some point. You both have a responsibility to your individual self, and you will have a responsibility to the collective. Both of these can exist at the same time, not necessarily holding equal weight, but they will exist at the same time. So, because being responsible for something is essentially, it's about consistency. We have to consistently show up. We are responsible, for instance, to our bodies. We're responsible for feeding them. If we don't feed our bodies, what happens? We die. We have very, very bad consequences. We are responsible to the collective on some level, even if it's just, I think of a really, really simple example, like feeding my daughter. Okay. I have a responsibility in she is part of the collective. Like, she's outside of me. I have a responsibility to give her food as her parent. I also do have a responsibility to obey safe traffic laws when I'm out, to not just randomly run red lights where there's a bunch of traffic present. Now, there are times, having lived in Mexico, I can tell you that there are times where, traffic laws just don't apply. They don't make sense. And a person can use discretion around, it was a very common thing. It was actually really difficult to transition back to the US and to Canada in the manner of driving, because in Mexico, you would pass anybody if it was safe. It doesn't matter if it's like, sometimes some people were like very unsafe, but they felt safe. And so it requires some discretion. If there's a really slow moving truck, they'll move over so that you can zip around them. If you're in a car, if you're in a faster car, they understand, it's like, that's them being responsible to the collective. And then you, as the driver, are responsible for your own individual car. So you see how it's, like, we have to balance these and shift these constantly depending on the situation. So essentially what I want to do today is just to help us release some of that, that clinging, that energetic charge, that live wire that's present on this idea of responsibility. And I mentioned, I'm going to share this tool. And this is a tool that some of you may have actually encountered this tool. You certainly have experienced the tool in healings, if I've given you a healing before, but you may not have known what I was doing. So if you saw me when I was doing a healing, kind of moving my hand around, this is what I was doing with it. Okay. So the mystery here of what was happening. So I was introduced to this tool back in 2001 by my first teacher, Tamara Wells. And this is a person, I had just moved to Boulder, Colorado. I was 22, I think. And I was so not spiritual. I was always spiritual in my own way, but I wasn't like what you might call woo-woo. I didn't meditate. I didn't, you know, I definitely communicated with something. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know how to name it. And there was a lot of ego that I had in that, in my understanding of life. And so my teacher sat me down by a river in Boulder. And she gave me this healing and she said all of these things. And she, as she was waving her hand around in the air, and she said all of these things. And some of them forever changed me. They forever changed me. And a lot of it was that they forever changed me because I went on to work with her and then worked with her teachers for the next 2-3 years. So that was part of the big change. But one of the things that she taught me is that I have to work with the energy that I have and not to accept that something is going to be difficult for the rest of my life, which is a teaching that I'll carry forward right now. The pandemic will not be difficult for the rest of our lives. And I truly believe this. I know it's hard to see out of this tunnel sometimes and to wonder when we're going to actually be able to get along again. But it has to do with us coming back to this place on responsibility. Okay. So I want to share, before I go into the tool, I'm just giving you a little sneak previews of the tool and to get you ready for it. But I want to share something about responsibility, that it is tied very strongly to our freedom and our personal independence. And at the same time, it's tied to our collective interdependence. So it's possible to put too much weight onto one thing. And even you could take this idea of responsibility, let's just say just masks. Masks in public places, okay? It is possible to put way too much charge. It becomes a live wire because what you're saying is every individual must wear a mask, or every individual must have the ability to choose whether they should wear a mask or not. And then there's this question of, well, in public places, you're around other people. Well, but you know, there's this whole universe of conversations around that. What is our collective interdependence? How do we need each other to show up? Is it more important to protect the vulnerable? Or is it more important to protect our individual freedoms? And I'll tell you this, this question of masks, and also quite frankly, the whole question of responsibility, it's tied to this idea within, it's called the five kleshas, it's in yoga, it's called raga and dvesha, which essentially means there's a raga, which means attachment, and dvesha, which means aversion. So it's essentially, Freud talks about this within the pleasure principle as well. This idea that we want to do the things that we like, and we don't want to do the things that we don't like. And essentially, this is the human condition. This is what we're dealing with all the time. So when we deal with things like masks and responsibility in general, whether it's about wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, and also, you know, about taking a promotion at work, we're dealing with this issue. We don't want to do things that we don't like. We only want to do things that we do like. And so it's too much to bear. It's too much to bear to have this level of pulling on each side right now. And the idea of responsibility, it just gets sunk. And what happens is that we move into a place of inaction. that's largely what we're seeing. You know, I was just having a conversation with a client yesterday about why people aren't applying for jobs. There's so many jobs open right now. And everyone's looking around. I mean, you know, I've passed by many stores that have signs that say, you know, we have to close early today because we don't have the staffing. Why are people not able to show up? And the mainstream like media narrative is that people, like what I've heard is that like people don't want to work. People have gotten used to not working in a pandemic. They've gotten used to working from home or just kind of being at home. And then they don't want to go back. Now, my question is, or is it such a great responsibility to take on to go work at McDonald's and risk one's life for $10 an hour? Is that too much responsibility to bear? Do you see how that ship can get sunk before it even leaves the harbor? All of a sudden, nervous system goes into complete collapse. So we are going to work on detangling this question of responsibility so that we can begin to navigate through these really, really murky waters. This is never easy. Responsibility is never an easy thing. If you read the anchor post for this month, the consistency post, it was all about this question of like the things that we must show up for every day. And then sometimes that showing up is the wrong choice. It is an irresponsible choice to show up if you don't have it in you. And I shared that experience of learning this, you know, going through and trying to hold myself to the level of this former teacher that I was working for. And being a new mom, having a newborn, and still waking up at 4:45 to do my 2 hours of morning practice, even though I was up 3-4 times at night. And, you know, to me, I was at the time wrestling with this decision of like, what's the right approach with consistency? What's the right approach with consistency? Now we have to undo the baggage. And that's what this tool I'm going to teach you today will do. One of the things I'll share with you that my teachers never shared with me, but I want to share it with you. This tool moves layers. It will not be an experience of, you know, you use this tool and then suddenly poof, everything's healed and everything's great. Doesn't work like that. Life doesn't work like that. What we must do is recognize that there are layers underneath layers, underneath layers, underneath layers. The work of our life is to begin to peel as many of these layers back as possible while recognizing that there are going to be more. For the rest of our lives, there will be some, if an issue is very deep in our lives, we will wrestle with it for the rest of our lives, maybe even into our next lives. But ideally, what we can do is notice when we have charge on something and it will become easier. And so this is all this tool really does. This is, it's a really simple visualization. We're gonna use a rose and you can use it, of course, on any triggering issue, but today we're gonna focus on responsibility. And why we use the rose, and I'm going to walk you through a visualization in a moment, but I want to share the why. I feel like this was one of the things that Western minds tend to need the why, and it's, I don't know why. I am like this. I find that everyone I work with is like this. And so I'm just going to share with you some of the symbolism of the rose and why the rose is the tool that we use, okay? So as I was mentioning, you know, my teacher was moving all of this stuff out of me and she taught me how to do this. And it's one of the things that she taught me to do was to use a light approach to working with heavy stuff. A light approach to working with heavy stuff. This is why humor is a big part of healing. Because when you lighten up the mood, the heaviness can more easily leave. So we use the rose because it's a really pleasant object. people don't have a ton of triggers around roses. And I haven't met a single person who's been averse to a rose. And people generally kind of just like roses. They're like, they're great. They're, you know, everyone likes a rose. But it's deeper than that. It's deeper than just liking it. The rose is symbolic of mystery. It's symbolic of the shadow and the light. Here's a beautiful flower that also has a very sharp thorn. And it's also symbolic of sweetness. So it's the lightness to move out the heavy. So we inhale its fragrance and we see its blooms. Yet it's a serious flower. This is not a daisy. This is not a dandelion. These are serious flowers. They take, if you've ever grown a rose, they take some cultivation. You can't just throw them into the ground and walk away. In Ayurveda and in herbal medicine, we know that the rose is cooling. The rose petals are cooling in nature, and rose leaves, they're very nutritive. So what they do is they reduce the heat in the body. And they tone weak tissues. If we were to drink a tea made with rose petals, it would tone the tissues. For women specifically, it works on the uterus, and it also works on the heart. This is, it's a great tea for men. Use it with hawthorn berries for a heart tonic. And it's, you know, the other thing is that it's very nourishing. I think I mentioned that it's the rose hips itself, which is what's out right now. In most parts of North America, the rose petals die away and you're left with this little tiny seed packet that is one of the biggest sources of vitamin C, much more so than any citrus that you'll find. So I didn't even plan on this, but I'm drinking some rose hip tea today. This is something I really love to take in autumn, because the plants tell us when it's time to take a certain medicine. And also my daughter's been a little sick. You can probably hear my voice a little scratchy. So I'm trying to stave off that. So it's, you think about how complex, if you just were to see a rose, there's much more complexity to it than if you were to see a daisy or a dandelion, right? It's like, it's this incredibly powerful tool. In the story of the Beauty and the Beast, the only thing that Beauty asks for when her father goes off on this big journey to find his fortune is not the Disney version, by the way, but the original version. She asks him to bring her a rose. In the story of the Little Prince, if anyone's read that, I highly recommend that book. He is in love with a rose. It's one of the only living things on his planet. And he cares for it. And when he's on Earth, he laments. He really misses his rose. And he thinks about his rose, and I think there's parts where he's actually like crying about missing his rose and how much he loves this rose. This is not a simple flower. So I share all this so that we can forget all of this when we're using the tool. So that your mind is not occupied with questioning why the heck are we using a rose for this, okay? So we're just gonna make the rose work. So allowing all of that to be there and allowing your own contemplation to take over and discover what else is there. What else does the rose offer you? And this is what we're gonna use. To go through, we're going to do a short meditation right now. And I'm going to introduce you to using this rose. So you can set anything aside. Just find yourself in a comfortable position. And just be still for a moment. Close your eyes. Find your breath. Notice your breath. Exactly as it is, without needing to change it at first. And then I invite you to deepen your breath. And as you deepen it, notice it moving into the lower part of your ribs. And as you deepen your ribs, the breathing in your ribs, notice how it softens your pelvis. Every inhale softens your pelvis and expands your whole lower abdomen. Just doing some breaths to come here to arrive. And then begin by just wiggling your toes a little bit, just to feel the lower half of your body. You can move your legs and just kind of maybe do some hip circles, or, you know, just moving just a little gentle movement in your lower body. Anything below your navel is what we're targeting here. And feel, now that you've connected to the lower body, feel the bottom half of your body. So from your navel down, feel that drawing downward into the earth. This may feel magnetic. It may feel grounding. It may come out as a sense of heaviness, but a welcome heaviness in your lower body. Or it may be some expression that I haven't named, but something that's welcome. Now, keeping that lower half of your body moving downwards. Notice the top half of your body expanding up, reaching up from the navel, up into the cosmos. You may feel a sense of lifting. Maybe your spine straightens out a little bit. Maybe your head lifts up, your chin and your ears draw back. You may feel a sense of expansion, a sense of awe. Or again, you might feel a sensation that I haven't named. Now, these two energies will meet in the area of your navel, your belly button. Allow the boundaries between them to be fluid, so that this grounding earth pull moves a little bit up into your digestive organs, and that lifting, lightening, cosmic pull fills your pelvis. Take another deep breath. We're going to move into a place called the center of the head. This is a place that allows you to access your seeing ability, your sixth chakra, the ability to see through the third eye. To find this, what you'll do is from the tops of your eyebrows, You'll draw a line straight back. And the tops of your ears, you'll draw a line across from one ear to the other. These lines will intersect in the middle of your head, in the center of your head. And you can visualize your attention moving there. You may like to use a light or a color that draws you right there into the center of your head. You can expand it so that the space feels big enough to be comfortable, but contained. This will be your sort of captain's ship, your captain's chair, your captain's seat from your ship. From this place, looking directly out of your third eye, that space between your eyebrows, see a rose that's about 3 feet away from you. This rose can be any color, but it should be a welcoming, inviting color. Can be any style, open, closed, however it appears. It may be difficult to see it at first. You may have your mind saying, am I making this up? Does this really exist? Tell your mind to take a little vacation. And we're just, and if it helps your mind, tell it that we're playing a game of make-believe. We're playing. Begin to focus in on the shape of the rose, the color, the texture. And notice too, if it seems to be blurred, or it might jump around, or it might appear and then disappear. This happens in the beginning, that when you practice this focus, this visualization. Just like going to the gym, you get better with time. We're going to do the practice, which is we're going to do this in real time, so to speak, later, but this will be just a practice round of exploding the rose, which is the way that we will reduce the charge. And so what you'll do to explode the rose is you can have, I'll offer you two methods, and you can certainly come up with your own if it's something appears more brightly to you. So you can either imagine that you have a detonator in your rose and you have the button for the bomb, or in, I'm sorry, I'm not very well versed in bomb language, but I believe it's the detonator is the button. Okay, you have a bomb in the rose and you have the detonator in your mind and in the center of your head, and you can just press that button and explode it. The other option is you can light a match or light a fire on underneath the rose and watch it just burn away. We'll do it a couple more times just to see which method you like and to give you practice on conjuring up the rose. So again, visualize a rose about 3 feet in front of you. This brings the rose outside of your aura. That's why we do it at that space, because we don't want to be really looking inside of our aura for these things, because then the rose becomes part of us. And not to say that, you know, your aura can actually shift quite a bit, but it just is a handy place to put it. So see a rose, any color, any texture, any shape, any degree of openness or closeness. Notice what appears. Don't try to force it. And then we'll try the two methods again to destroy the rose. You can set off a bomb or light a fire underneath it. Okay, we'll do this one more time, a little faster. See your rose. Notice its color and immediately destroy it using your chosen method. It will get easier and easier to visualize this and to know what works for you in terms of the destruction method the more you practice. Okay, so the next thing we're going to do is in your mind's eye, in this place in the center of your head, command a can of purple psychic paint to drop all over your energetic body. And this paint will stick, the purple color will stick wherever you have charge on the idea of responsibility. Just don't overthink it. Just allow that paint to dump all over you and know that that is the right place for it to go. Now create a new rose and allow that rose again to be any inviting color. If it's a color or something seems off with it, you can always just destroy that rose and create a new one. And this rose will move it in to your space. And it's going to move everywhere there is this purple paint stuck to your energetic body. And it will suck up this color, suck up the charge on responsibility that you're holding in your body. And just know that the rose is infinite. It can hold all of the paint covering you, but you also have the option to destroy it and create a new one if you feel like you need a second round. Now, when the rose has collected all of the paint or enough of the paint, you can pull that rose back out to that 3 feet outside of you and destroy it. And I'll give the option if you want to do another round, if you feel like you have a little bit more charge that you want to release, then in silence, I'll just give you a minute to tend to that. And if you don't, just savor the feeling of having just done this. Now, before you open your eyes, I'll share with you that whenever we release something, whenever we move heavy things through, we want to do them again with a light touch. So for today, we'll close by just taking your hand, any hand, placing one hand on your heart, and then one hand on your pelvis. Feel the warmth of your hands against your body, and the warmth of your body against your hands. Feel the weight, the pressure, your body pressing against your body. Feel your breath, how that affects the pressure, how that affects the weight. Feel the air outside of your body. Feel whatever you're sitting on, whatever your feet are touching, whatever body parts are touching each other. Hear any sounds. Notice yourself as a body, immersed in the collective. The individual in the space of everyone else. You can release your hands and open your eyes whenever you're ready. So, since we have a small group today, we'll say that we have one person on today, but I want to offer, Katie, I want to offer you the chance to ask any questions about that. But anyone who's watching the recording, I want to offer you the chance to ask me, you know, you can talk about it in email, or you can ask me in our next one-to-one, anything that is lingering about this practice. So we'll start with Katie. Katie, do you have any thoughts on that?
I feel very relaxed right now. And I guess one question I had, well, two questions related to the destruction of the rose. So one, each time we do this, does it, I mean, you led us through like two or three rounds of destroying it to figure out which method the bomb or the flames would be more fitting. But is it that it should almost always be the same method, or is it like, is there any significance to that? Can it jump back and forth?
Great question. It's something that, like, I tend to have one thing that I use. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, like I'm a bomb person all the way. And every once in a while, the flames are nice. I don't think it has any significance. It's more what it is, you know, and I was actually taught many different options for it. I've just kind of whittled it down, because mm-hmm. sometimes the mind can go into like too many choices. So it's, you can make up your own manner of doing it. It's just a matter of like what works for you, what speaks to you, what's the easiest thing, what can happen with this stuff is that your mind will very much get into play. Your mind will start to have all of these conversations while you're doing something like this. And it'll say, well, you're just making this up. You know, you're not really doing anything. Energy isn't seeable, so it's not real to the mind. And what we have to do is just make it as easy as possible and sort of tell the mind to take a vacation, take a rest, you know, go figure out some math problem in the background or something, you know, and let me just do this work with the energetic expression that is the easiest and most achievable.
Okay. And I guess I apologize if this wasn't more clear, because I kind of just fell into this beautiful state of relaxation throughout. But I guess using this is best when we're feeling this sense of responsibility and like that kind of the battle between the individual and the collective responsibility.
Yeah. This is a tool that can be used for anything that you have charge on. And what I mean by the charge is like this, I draw this example of responsibility, and especially talked about the pandemic, because it's very real right now for people. But so let's say, here's when not to use it, okay? Here's when not to use it. When you are super emotional, not the time. That's a time, in my experience, move your body. Find a safe place to express in a very, very ugly way. Not necessarily with anyone's witness. I'm happy to witness always, but you don't, like, if you're angry at your friend, you know, that's not the time to be like, I'm going to sit and I'm just going to explode a bunch of roses. You know, like, be angry, be the feeling that you have. But when you're in that kind of cleanup phase and you're like, wow, I was really triggered by that conversation, that's a really great time to start to pull on this tool. So it's, you know, I had, one of the reasons I didn't teach this tool for a long time is because I dealt, my first teacher was what you might call problematic. I had several teachers that were fairly problematic in my life, but she would often put us in extremely risky positions and then make us, and I say us, like she always had a gaggle of students hanging out with her, make us kind of force ourselves to deal with the challenge by using these tools. And there are other tools that we worked with, but I don't feel that was a very responsible way to go about it. It's like, it really shook me up a lot. It shook me into, like, it brought out a lot of courage in me, but it was rough. So, that's why I say, have the experience, you know, don't put yourself in a position of purposely trying to bring up the charge. And, you know, and I think if she were a safer teacher, you can do that. You can do that. I mean, this is the point of like why people do ayahuasca ceremonies or, you know, mushrooms. It's the same, like you do that in a safe place, a safe container. You can bring up charge if you have guidance to release it. But it's like the example of like, I'm just going to randomly, you know, take a bunch of mushrooms and then go like do something crazy. You know, it's a very different experience. You'll have charge that will come up that you may not know how to deal with. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's helpful. Mm-hmm. Makes more sense.
Yeah, so absolutely. I recommend everybody do this in context of the pandemic. Certainly, it's a really, really right place to do it because, you know, if we're all at home, I mean, no one's really at home in the way that they used to be, but kind of, but if you're in a position where like you just got back from the grocery store, you just got back from like, I went to this past weekend, I was at a corn maze at a pumpkin patch and I was gathering, it was with a friend of mine. And then she ended up bringing two other families. And it was so weird to be in a group. I haven't really been in that in a long time. And so it was this feeling of like, oh God, like I have a lot of charge on, you know, meeting new people. And these were, you know, like all from the same school that they all go to. So I didn't know them. I was kind of the outsider. And so this was when I came home, that was the time for me to go through and go, wow, I had charge on that. Where is that charge in my energetic body? And it can come through to the physical body too. There's a connection, you know? So if I have charge, let's say in my arms about that, then you know, I might end up feeling sore or something like that. Doesn't always come through, but it can. Other questions?
I don't think so right now.
Great. Well, I invite everybody who's watching the recording to send me questions, because some of you may have been introduced to this tool, whether by me or by someone else, and may not really know, you know, like you never had the chance to like ask the questions in the moment. But also I encourage you to play with this tool, to like really see if, you know, some people, I've actually, it's funny because the guy who developed this, is this all comes from this place called the Berkeley Psychic Institute. And I studied with, not them specifically, but I studied with the students of the guy who founded that. His name was Louis Bostwick. He died and he trained, I think hundreds of people. I'm not quite sure how many when he touched when he was alive, but what he did was he gathered many, he was a mystical seeker, and he gathered many different experiences from many different spiritual traditions all over the world. And he turned them into this format that makes understanding how to use your natural intuition, it places it into a container. Because we have to have the container in order for that, for our minds to really allow us to experience being intuitive, which all of us are. I will say some people have different abilities. Some people are born with this and they never shut it. We're all born with it, but some people never shut it off, or some people it is far too strong for them to shut it off. Some people in many cultures, people with things like schizophrenia or what we might call bipolar or multiple personalities, they're known to be these intuitives. And it's just when we label it as a pathology that it becomes problematic. So anyway, so I say all this because you could use the rose. I've heard people use very similar ways of similar tools, but using different symbols. Some people might, I've heard people using like a bubble, like imagine it all being a bubble, or I've heard this one that's like an aquarium, that you imagine your body is kind of an aquarium, and then you have the fish and then you slowly clear out the fish. And so you will find this couched in many different formats. And I encourage you to really use it and to explore it and figure out the right expression for you. Because it's meant to be personalized. Like for me, the rose really works. It's always worked. It worked instantly the first time I was introduced to it. And it still works after, you know, 20 years of practicing it. And I guarantee you that anything that you put your attention on and you say, this is consistently, okay, we'll go back to this theme of consistency. Consistently put your attention on. This is not to say one day you do the bubble, one day you do the aquarium, one day you do the rose, because it's just, it's like saying a mantra. If you have a mantra practice and you change every single day what you're chanting, who you're devoting yourself to, it can just confuse things a little bit. So it's better to be consistent about the tool that you use until it's sort of, it either is like the tool that's solid for you, or it runs its course. So you've been initiated now into this tool. It's a very powerful tool. You are welcome to use it. You are welcome to, once you have played with it enough and feel really comfortable, you're welcome to share it with other people. I have no problem with that. Just be comfortable enough with it. I recommend that you've used it for, you know, 3 to 6 months. Let's just put an arbitrary, you know, number out there on a regular basis, so that you can feel its ability to shift things. There's many things that we can do with the rose. There's many different tools around calling in experiences or objects that the rose, you know, this is the destruction side. We can also use it in the creation side. So it's just a symbol, but it's a powerful symbol. So I hope you have all enjoyed this, and I hope that you do reach out with questions, because I am more than happy to talk about this stuff. And if you do want to go deeper into some of the other tools, let me know, because we could do a lot of work on those in our gatherings here, and go into a little bit more about how you work with energy, how you access your intuition, and how you, you know, can begin to bridge that physical energetic boundary. So we'll end today with, we'll just go back, closing our eyes. We don't have to go into a full meditation, but we're just going to end today with a little positive self-regard. We're going to hype ourselves up a little bit, okay? So closing your eyes and just coming right back to that breath, that expansive inhale, moving down into your ribs and down into your pelvis. And the exhale with some contraction. And as you are breathing, just silently say to yourself 1 to 3 things that you have done in your recent history, whether it's today, in the past week, in the past month, that you're really proud of, things that you can celebrate. These can be really mundane things, or they can be very big things. You can just hype yourself up a little bit. Notice how it feels to give yourself credit. Celebrate yourself fully and allow those celebrations as you repeat them. Just, you can just simply say something as simple as, I'm celebrating myself for blank. And allow those to fall on you like gold, beautiful energy. Few more deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thank you, Katie, for being here live. Thank you for all of you who are watching the recording. And I will speak to many of you tomorrow for Body Story Hunger. Many of you are going to be coming. Super excited about that. There is still time for those of you who haven't signed up. You can still sign up and get your Nest 50% discount. So please come. And otherwise, I will see you in the next Awake gathering in a month. We're going to be talking about surrender in November. One of my favorite topics. Okay. This is going to be some really powerful stuff. So I look forward to that. I look forward to seeing all of your faces soon. Bye.
Thank you, Sonia.
Thank you.